Testing season is right around the corner, and this is when confidence really matters. When kids take time to review key concepts and strengthen their skills before assessments, it can make all the difference. IXL helps reinforce what they're learning right now, so they walk into every test feeling prepared, capable, and confident. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts. Designed for students from pre-K through 12th grade, IXL delivers personalized, interactive practice that adapts to your child's level and pace. It's an easy, effective way to support learning as the school year heads into its final stretch. Studies show kids who use IXL score higher on tests, proven in all 50 states. IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now, and listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLLearning.com/audio. Visit IXLLearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Life can feel overwhelming, but you don't have to go through it alone. On my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Braithen, I share openly and vulnerably about everything life brings us and what we can learn by living with our hearts a little bit more open. Every Friday, a new episode brings you a new story with topics on self-care, motherhood, healing, and more. You are enough, just the way you are. This podcast is a reminder of that. Follow and listen to From the Heart with Rachel Braithen wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, DGS 104.1 FM, KMOX, a few minutes past 2 p.m. Seems to be a pattern going on in the news lately where people do something and it's not received the way they thought it was going to be received, and then they start really showing their ass, sort of like Gayle King and Katy Perry, and now it's Bill Maher. I don't know if you said this on the air or off. I don't remember.
It was off, yeah.
But Bill Maher did a podcast, and he said, not only should I not be criticized for going to see Donald Trump, I should be a hero.
Come on, man.
Having dinner with the president of the United States does not make you a hero in any way, shape, or form.
Dude, there's not. I said this before. There are a lot of things he says that are really smart, but he's very much about himself,
yeah.
Bill Maher.
Yeah, you kind of nailed
it. And anything that makes him feel important then makes that a big deal. So yeah, you know, I'm a hero. You're a hero. You're not a senator going to write a balanced bill that's got input from both parties. You're an entertainer who went to dinner at the president's house
with Kid Rock.
With Kid Rock and somebody else too, right?
Dana White.
Right. So you got to do that. And again, fine if you wanted to do that. I don't think the issue with him going is that he went.
Yeah, I don't blame him.
No.
I don't think badly of him because he did.
No.
I don't think he's going to the enemy camp. I also don't think that he's being some sort of a shuttle diplomacy Henry Kissinger
right.
You know, mediator either. You went and you had, you know, chicken at the White House.
Right. See, this is the thing that I'm sure a lot of his viewers do think of him as a traitor for that. Right. Because there are a lot of people that are his viewers that are very liberal, and he's not as much as they are. He's definitely more middle-ish now than he used to be. But I also think it's because the spectrum moved.
Yeah.
I'm not so sure he moved that much, but I know that a lot of things do move. But his categorization of things is what's hilarious to me. Like, I've spent the last 30 years making fun of this person because he has. You know, he got sued by Donald Trump because Trump made the joke about Trump's mom being an orangutan, right?
Yeah.
Like, he's made 20, 30 years of making those jokes and picking on the guy and talking about how his policies are wrong and doing all that. And you meet him for one night and you're like, maybe he can be the good guy. Like, what happens during that time that makes you change everything you've said over the course of... And it's the feeling special. Like, he invited me to the White House. That's a big deal. Makes me feel good. So that makes me like him more. Mm. Those two are a lot more alike than you'd think in that regard, right? Because what's the fastest way to get on Trump's good side?
Yeah.
Compliment.
Praise him.
Right. And then there are a lot of people like that. Those two are just notably like that.
I got a weird calling out just now. I was walking through the hallway and I run into Reardon.
Oh, yeah?
And he goes, come on, Glover. It's 80 degrees out there. You don't have to dress like that. If you can't see me online, I'm wearing a gray hoodie and a cap. And I notice he's wearing exactly the same thing I'm wearing.
Yes, he is.
And I'm like, look at your clothes, dude. And he's like, no.
Yeah, he's really good at that.
Like, this is how the diss track starts.
Yeah.
Mark's my buddy.
It's also not 80 degrees. It's like 60 out there.
Oh, no.
It heated up pretty good.
Yeah.
Oh, it heated up, did it?
Yeah, big time. And it's...
I'm stupid.
So Mark's my buddy, and he is definitely the shoot first, ask questions later kind of guy sometimes. Because there have been a few times he'll do stuff like that to me, and I'm like, did you literally just say that to me because you did this? And he's like, oh, yeah.
Did you hear the story about the stinky tennis player?
The stinky tennis player.
No. Yeah, the number four player in Great Britain was playing an opponent and went to the umpire and said, can you tell her to use some deodorant because she stinks? And the umpire did. I don't know whether she put on deodorant or not.
Why would you do that?
But it embarrassed her. And so then she came out and apologized like, oh, gosh, maybe I shouldn't have done that.
Why would the umpire say anything? You're there to officiate.
She's the number four player.
You're there to officiate the match. You're not there to officiate BO.
How did you smell her from all the way across the court?
I mean, look, it can be bad. That stuff can be bad. But you know what? Just deal with it. Deal with it. You're a professional. You're supposed to be one of the best in the world. If that's impacting your play, that's a you problem, not a them problem.
So apparently the woman who originally said, like, she smells really bad, posted on her Instagram story, which if you have Instagram, you know that disappears after 24 hours, so it's kind of a fleeting message here. She said, it was a heat-of-the-moment comment that I truly regret.
Oh, you're just being a brat is what it was.
I mean, I've made lots of heat-of-the-moment comments that I regret, but... That's different. Like, it's not just an outburst. You have to walk to the umpire. You have to decide at that moment you're going to say it to the umpire. You say it. Then you don't stop the umpire like, wait a minute. I'm so sorry. This is just stupid.
Yeah.
You let them go ahead and talk to the other player. You let it play out. You finish the game. And then when you get backlash, you're like, I should apologize.
That's exactly what it is. Right. Mm-hmm. You're sorry that you angered
Which is,
people.
I'm sure, what Reardon will do with me.
That player is sorry. Was it a men's player or women's player?
Women's player.
So she's sorry that the blowback is now coming back to her.
Yeah. And you know what? That's just not very good girl code. Like, we do, even if you really dislike another woman, there are certain things where it's like, hey, if they've got that going on, maybe you say it to them privately.
Yeah.
You don't go to the ref and say, like,
she stinks so bad.
She's so stinky. You should fix that. It's dude, that's not cool. It is not okay.
I mean, like, I know we all, at some point, we all smell bad, right? I mean, that happens. Somebody's going to do that to me in that setting. I'm going to jump the net and give them a hug. If they say that to me in that setting.
You just
said I smell bad. Come here, buddy. You can have some too.
Why is that so hot?
Gonna mentally note what not to one of the many things to not say to Kevin.
Yeah,
don't do that to Kevin.
Don't do that. If you're gonna do it, you better be ready.
God, I remember coming in on a Monday to junior high school football when you left your pads in the locker all weekend.
It's all like that. My catcher's gear was the worst.
Oh.
Because the catcher's gear never, I mean, like, I guess you probably could wash the chest protector, but you can't wash the rest of it. And for, you know, you're outside in Miami and it's 95 every day and you're just, I would change shirts two or three times a practice and all that's just in there and it just stays in there the whole season.
Phoebe took gymnastic lessons for years. And that place, just like...
Oh, I bet.
I mean, it just, like, immediately... I'm sure if I went there today, it'd be exactly the same smell.
Yeah.
Maybe we finally found a use for the full-body deodorant.
Yeah.
In situations like that.
For our gear?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I saw a commercial for one... I think it was Native deodorant, and they were like, 72-hour protection. And I'm thinking... Why?
Who needs that?
You consistently need to go 3 days without taking a shower. I don't understand.
I also don't believe it.
And so much of it is built around being intimate, because if you're close enough to smell someone.
Right, right.
So who's going to go 72 hours without washing and then go, it's time?
It's all good. I got my deodorant on. I smell fine.
Don't worry. I sprayed myself 3 days ago.
Yeah, I'm good.
Let's do this thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, Brian brings up a good point. It seems like a sport where it would be a little tougher to smell a stinky opponent.
That's what I thought. Like, I mean, you're far away. You're outside probably, right?
Yeah, maybe when you're like going to where you sit, you cross paths, but that's just pretty catty.
Again, get over yourself.
Pretty catty.
Like, it's not that big a deal.
What do you guys think of...
Wait, can I ask a question?
Yeah.
If I had really bad VO, would you guys tell me?
I would.
I think you would.
I would.
I appreciate
it. I probably would not.
He would tell Steve to tell me. She's really stinky.
Nah, yeah. Steve, could you talk to Rach?
We had a stinky guy in college, and we had to all band together and basically force one of our other classmates to go and single him out in a room by himself and
tell him that
he was stinky. Don't know, wasn't there.
Funnily enough, they didn't choose Andrew for that delicate dad.
They didn't choose me, who was the person he hated more than anyone.
I had a teammate.
They didn't choose me to go do it.
A teammate in college. I won't name him because he did advance a little bit in baseball. People might recognize the name.
Nolan Arenado.
Who would play. He was a starter, so he played every game, and he was good. And most days would not shower after the game and would just go back to the apartments and just be there. And we'd be like, bro. And he's like, oh, yeah, I just took a shower and I got back. We're like, no, you didn't, because we can still smell you. On a day we had a rain out, we tied him to a chair and set him out on the mound and let him sit in the rain for a little while. Like, you're going to take a shower today.
I didn't either.
So we tied him up.
Seems like abuse.
Well, if you told him 100 times and he's not going to listen.
Well, if you told him a lot.
So anyway, we filled a pillowcase with batteries. And,
no injuries happened. He just got a rain shower.
Did that fix him?
It did. He took care of the problem after that.
Fixed him for a few minutes.
Being tied up by several young men
does
that.
It wasn't really. It was like tape. Like, you use tape to the chair.
Oh, that's fine.
Yeah.
That's easy to get off.
Yeah. It is. But somebody has to do it for you.
I feel like he just confessed something.
No, I didn't. I was not a part of it. I just laughed at it. And it was necessary. He needed it.
You didn't say we did this.
Yeah, we as a team, because you do things as a team. If we had gotten punished, gotten punished for it, we would have been punished as a team. So.
All for one, one for all.
Yeah.
So we stuck.
I didn't have
we just
status.
Stuck that stupid effort in the trunk, and we picked up some corn.
You have to understand, I had no status on that team. I was low man on the totem pole. I didn't do anything.
So we put a towel over his face and poured
a bunch
of water on it.
I just got to be like,
as your attorney, I would advise you to stop talking.
No, I'm just saying. I supported it. If I had been told, you got to help. Yeah.
I'm just saying, I stand by every second of it.
I would.
That's all I'm saying.
Probably got to take a shower.
Not trying to get myself in trouble.
Did you guys put soap on him, or it was
just...
Okay.
Wow.
Well, I mean, just
only...
the rain is not going to get rid of the smell.
Only, it was only on the top of his head. They pretty shampooed his head.
I don't want this to be anyone's worst day at their job. I just want to ask. This is usually when Steve comes in.
He's retaining a lawyer for the company.
Oh, my God.
He thinks one all for one, one for all. If
like
Kevin's
if I,
getting sued,
if I,
we're
if
all
I
getting
did
sued.
That yesterday, I would have trouble.
Yeah, the statute of limitations is passed.
But I'd also be a grown person that did something wrong.
I mean, come on. You taped a little boy to a chair and you
a
soaked him up a little bit.
A 21-year-old man.
He got him all.
A 21-year-old man.
He got him all good and soapy.
We're all in the glass house on this one.
Yeah.
we put the burlap sack over his head.
No.
We cut out little eye holes in it. Soaped him up real good.
I didn't tape him.
Feels as regretting sharing this story.
No, I'm not at all. I'm not at all.
I just kept yelling yes, yes, yes from outside the...
No.
I provided snacks and refreshments for everybody to show that I was very supportive of everything.
Oh, there's that kid calling.
That kid who's now 55 years old.
Yes.
Hey, guys, it's Stinky Pete. I'm the one who got tied up.
Stinky Pete.
I just want to say it's not that big of a deal, and Wheels is a good guy.
Hey, he wouldn't blame me.
Okay. Brought to you by Trident Exteriors. Welcome back, DGS. Randy says, checking in from Florida. Thank you for the awesome t-shirt. We sent them a DGS t-shirt. My daughter goes to FSU, currently under lockdown because of a mass shooting. She is safe, but my God, scared the life out of me. Happened at Union, where all the food in the bookstore is. So sick of this. Oh, man. I mean, you're living one of my nightmares. When I looked up and saw FSU, I just read it as KU because.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's.
Yeah.
Your fear.
Yeah.
And even though there are like 30,000 students, you just know that your child's one of them, you know? Terrible.
My kid was the North Carolina one.
Yeah.
I mean, she wasn't on campus, but like that's all going on.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, right. Razor's Edge?
Yeah. There's a couple things we could talk about here. Let's start with a wonderful story out of Arizona. So there was a missing toddler. He wandered off from home, and he ended up 7 miles away from his home on this ranch. And this rancher's dog goes out and patrols for coyotes, and the dog found the little boy and led him back to his owner, and his owner was able to reunite the kid with the parents.
They are so much the best. That's exactly like that. I mean, obviously different because of the little kid, but exactly like that story, the guy that got lost in the mountains and just ran upon walked up on a wand or like a random dog, and the dog's like, basically follow me, and he followed the dog back to people.
Hmm.
So cool.
That's great. Dogs are blessed.
Here's another really cute and fun story. So in a town in Japan, they were trying to get kids to like interact with their elders more. So what they did was they created a trading card game similar to Pokemon, but with the faces of local elderly men, and eventually like gave them different powers and stuff. So now the kids are really into trading and like, oh, you got a good one. So they're getting to know their elders in this town through this trading card game. I just thought that was extremely cute.
I got the pants pooper.
I like that a lot.
They even have like attack powers so you can battle them, which I think that would get kind of
getting like, towards the edge.
Well, maybe like insulting. It's like, well, I got a really powerful card. And it's like, well,
that was my first thought.
Oh, you're one of the weak ones.
Yeah, that was my first thought. Yeah. Like,
or unless they're all powerful.
If your card is garbage, like you got to feel not great about it.
what else can we talk about here? We already talked about Elon and his baby mama drama. The cost of, do you guys see how much they're charging for stuff at Coachella?
Yeah, and I saw the weekend financing thing too.
Yes. Yeah. Tell us about that.
So, like 60% of everyone who went to Coachella this weekend did it on like a buy now, pay later kind of deal, which obviously makes the strong implication that 60% of people who are buying these extremely expensive tickets to go watch this music festival in the desert cannot actually afford to do it. They're just like taking out a financing option to pay for your concert tickets, and it's just one of the more recession indicator has become a popular meme thing to say that doesn't really mean anything anymore when people say it. But between this and the financing pizza from Domino's, so you don't have to pay it all off right now, not a great sign, and it's not a great sign, I think, for the financial literacy of a lot of people of like my generation, perhaps a bit younger, that like I don't consider myself the most financially literate, but I look at a thing like Coachella and I just go, I can't afford to do that. Whether I have to pay now, whether I have to pay in 6 months, I don't have that kind of money. But I think there are a lot of people of, like I said,
what kind of money are you talking?
It's $550 for a 3-day general admission pass.
Oh, that doesn't hit me as crazy. Not what I paid for Phoebe to see single concerts.
Yeah, but it's also not counting your transportation to get there.
Did you see how much it was for the Masters?
No.
Minimum ticket for an actual day of play was $4,000.
Oh, yeah.
And there's like a lottery system.
Yep.
Like you just, you can't even get them.
You have to, yeah. I'm sure there are people that have preferential treatment. It is a country club after all.
Mm-hmm. The food at Coachella was absolutely ridiculous. People were reporting paying like $150 for a couple of burritos and a couple of waters. I mean, it's crazy. Andrew brings up a great point with the financial literacy. That's exactly where my brain went to, too, when I heard about this buy now, pay later thing. I just feel like we are we are so addicted to our creature comforts because we have so many of them, right? And so many things are instant gratification that we've kind of lost that ability to like buckle down and get through something and make a sacrifice.
Yeah.
I think most people are just used, or not most people, but a lot of people are like, no, I'm just going to do what feels good, even if it's a terrible financial decision.
And we have not just lost the ability to be told no, we've lost the ability to tell ourselves no.
Yeah.
We've lost the ability to go, Coachella looks like a lot of fun this year. And I even have some friends that are going, but that's just kind of out of my range. That's too rich for my blood.
My version of that is I'm not planning on retiring for another 10 years, but I'm also not planning on making much money for more than 10 years. And that changes things where you're like, oh, I've been living pretty high on the hog because I've been making some money, but that's going to come to an end. And then you have to really rethink your lifestyle.
Testing season is right around the corner, and this is when confidence really matters. When kids take time to review key concepts and strengthen their skills before assessments, it can make all the difference. IXL helps reinforce what they're learning right now, so they walk into every test feeling prepared, capable, and confident. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts. Designed for students from pre-K through 12th grade, IXL delivers personalized, interactive practice that adapts to your child's level and pace. It's an easy, effective way to support learning as the school year heads into its final stretch. Studies show kids who use IXL score higher on tests, proven in all 50 states. IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now, and listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLLearning.com/audio. Visit IXLLearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Is your business struggling to be seen, not reaching the right customers?
Yeah.
Odyssey's here to help. Your one-stop shop for digital marketing.
Wait, really?
With targeted digital media, plus SEO, SEM, social, OTT, and more, we help your business reach the right audience and drive results.
Whoa, hey, one at a time.
Stop missing out on valuable customers. Visit digitallocalads.com to learn more about our local advertising solutions. That's digitallocalads.com.
Okay, people, line starts here.
Welcome back, guys. DGS. Time to talk to our pal, Ricky Horton. Hello, Rick.
Hey, Dave, how are you today?
Doing great, buddy. So, you know, I'm embarrassed that when we saw you on opening day, you were within 10 feet of Rachel and Andrew, and I didn't introduce you guys.
Oh,
I apologize.
Oh, my goodness. I can't. Well, I could have probably handled that myself, too. But, you know, opening day, my brain was probably going in 50 different directions. But we'll make good on that.
Are you at the ballpark?
Yes, it's been planes, trains, automobiles, and subways, actually. The last 24 hours, I literally took a train up to see my brother, about a two-hour train ride up, had lunch with him, and came back and took a subway, and I just got up to the booth. So it's been an interesting day, but I love it, though. It's really cool. A lot of energy, obviously, in New York City.
Yeah, you're from that part of the world, right?
Yeah, I am. I'm not actually from the city, but about 2 hours north. So when we came down to the city, it was too big for me. I'm from a small town in New York. People don't realize there are actually small towns in New York. But we would come to New York, and we would kind of just get nervous and look over our shoulder. And now I'm very comfortable here.
So I think I told you before, Rick, that I've never seen a big league game outside of Busch Stadium 2 and 3, and I just made all the plans for my son and I to go to Wrigley in May. What's the vibe like at Met Stadium?
Okay, so take out all the red and just put in blue. And put a scoreboard that's about 10 stories high right in center field, and that's kind of what it is. And imagine that it's a really cool thing that if the home team hits a home run, that an apple comes up in the air and then goes back down again. I mean, that's, you can't get that kind of entertainment just anywhere. But it is, you know, honestly, this is the New York crowd has always kind of prided themselves on being boisterous / obnoxious / whatever you want to call it, but that's being a good fan here in New York. And I actually grew up rooting for the Mets. So when I come to New York, I get a little bit of a feel of my youth, which is fun.
Yeah. Who are your guys, Rick? What players were you rooting for back then?
So Tom Seaver, and I just kind of looked at, was reading some notes, and, you know, Citi Field is actually, the address of Citi Field is 41 Seaver Way, and Tom Seaver was just in his prime when I was young, and the 69 Mets were the World Series champions. They'd gone kind of out of nowhere, and Tug McGraw was the reliever, and it's the you got to believe thing that was going on in New York. But my favorite player, actually, even though there were better play. I did see Willie Mays play here at the end of his career, but my favorite player was their right fielder, Ron Swoboda, who made two great catches in the World Series and just kind of an average player, but for some reason I was drawn to him.
That's very cool, man. That era, that time was pretty good, and those Mets teams obviously were not obviously, you know, there's a rivalry between the Mets and the Cardinals, but that started much later.
Yes. Yeah. No, well, the rivalry actually was in my family. You probably heard me talk about this, Wheels, but my mother's mother was a huge Stan Musial, Red Shandies fan, and she was a Cardinal fan through and through. So most of my uncles and aunts were Cardinal fans, but I was a Met fan. And so, you know, we would only go if we ever came to a game here, and I saw, you know, Mike Shannon play here. I saw Lou Brock. I saw Gibson pitch. So, I mean, we would only go to Cardinal Met games because that would kind of appease both sides of the family. And so I got drafted by the Cardinals, my grandmother was she excited about that.
That's so cool. That's really cool.
Yeah. And there's there have been a lot of different vibes for Mets fans over the decades. And I think they're in a vibe place now where they're very happy.
Yeah, well, they not only are you seeing blue everywhere, but there's a lot of green around here too, and that comes in the form of dollar bills that are going to a very high priced payroll for them. But you know, that's okay. I mean, their owner has it and he's spending it, so good for the game, good for the sport in general, and that he's, you know, investing in players and investing in what's going on here. And you know, it remains to be seen whether or not, you know, 1 + 1 = 3 here or not. But they've got a good team, and that's helping their vibe.
Rick, what did you think of the one Soto kerfuffle? As I understand it, he was asked in an interview about his slow start, and he said, "Well, you know, I don't have the best hitter in the league protecting me, Aaron Judge, and Pete Alonso, who's not doing bad either."
No, he's been killing it.
But a lot of people thought that was petty and didn't show much class, and others are saying, "Hey, he's just telling the truth."
Yeah, well, I mean, he may be telling the truth, but sometimes you know, the truth isn't always, you know, you got to be careful about how you say it in love, and I'm not sure that was done the right way. I don't know. I mean, in my mind, I wasn't there for the moment, and I don't know whether that was a misstep or something he would pull back on or not, but, you know, I mean, you're going to live with your teammates for 6 months, and everything gets blown up in New York. If you're using a torpedo bat, the whole world's going to know. I mean, they know. They know in Denmark and Sweden that there's such a thing as a torpedo bat because it happened in New York. Everybody knows it. And, you know, even though Brendan Donovan was using one last year, it just doesn't matter because it wasn't New York.
Yeah, it's a weird he's in a weird place right now because I'm sure he's feeling pressure, right? He just signed this massive contract and he's not performing early, and I'm sure it's wearing on him. But, I mean, and I'm asking this as much for the Cardinals tonight as anything to do with Juan Soto, because Pete Alonso is killing it.
Yeah.
He's already driven in 21 runs. I mean, so you're looking at a guy that's on pace for 130 runs batted in on the year way he's going, maybe more than that. But he's hitting .360. His OPS is 1,200. So Pete looks like the Pete Alonso from a few years ago.
Yeah, and I would say both those guys really fall into the category of guys that not only have power, but they're also good hitters.
Yeah.
And Alonso's a really good hitter, and he'll hit the ball to right field. He'll hit the ball out to right field, too, occasionally. And, you know, there are times, in fact, last year when we played them, I think he was cold then. Alonso just was late on everything, and his timing was off, and that happens to literally everybody in baseball. You're going to go through that stage where you're not seeing the ball. Wilson Contreras went through it for the first 10 to 12 days of the season. So it's going to happen, but you know, Soto, you know, I still wouldn't want to pitch to that dude. I mean, I think once they start kind of having nice moments together, I think all that will move on, and Soto will become the darling here in New York again.
So I've noticed that Juan Soto, he doesn't suffer from insecurity.
Oh, no.
And
no, he doesn't.
He loves to stare down the pitcher.
Yeah.
Did that happen much in your day, Rick? And if so, how did you handle it?
Well, you'd end up getting the ball in your ribs if you did that, which, you know, throwing at a guy, you know, up around the head. We've seen that a couple of times in baseball in the last few days. That's a bad thing. But you know, when a guy would be demonstrative at the plate, it didn't matter who you were, you kind of wouldn't get away with that. Either a teammate would tell you, and honestly, back in the day, the thing we always forget, because it wasn't that long ago, but we still forget it, pitchers hit.
Right.
So, you know, a pitcher would throw at somebody, then they'd throw at your guy, and then your guy would, I mean, and then maybe you even. So, you know, it kind of all took care of itself because it was policed by players. But, you know, honestly, I asked Bob Carpenter about Soto when he was a young player, and the first thing he told me about him, he said, "You're going to love watching Juan Soto play. Do not misconstrue his animation at the plate. He literally is just a kid that loves to play, and he's demonstrative. He's not trying to show anybody up. He just does that. It's just kind of a natural outgrowth of his personality." And so I've always kind of taken that at face value.
Rick, I've always wondered, because when we played Little League, the pitcher was usually the stud on the team and batted cleanup and hit all the home runs and stuff.
Yeah, like you and me.
When does that kind of go by the wayside, when the stud pitchers are no longer the best hitters?
Well, you know, it's hard to be the best at both. I mean, it is true that the pitcher was the best, but you know, to be elite at two different, I always say they're two different skills. People say, why couldn't pitchers hit? Well, you know, why can't plumbers farm? I mean, it's just two different things, two different actual things that you do athletically. So it's not that unusual. Or why can't a punter catch a pass? I mean, they're just, yes, it's football, but it's two different things. So, you know, I think what happens is you get to the elite level and guys are just better than you. I told my college coach I was going to DH my sophomore year after my freshman year in college, and he said, "That's great. Where are you transferring to?"
Yeah, I think part of this too is, you know, coaching kids, part of it is the younger you are, the best players are just the biggest players.
Yeah, yeah.
Kids that grew a little early, so they throw harder than everybody. And eventually that all levels out, and you see where the skill sets split up.
So the skill set comes into not only big and strong, but it's also, you know, who's the quickest players? I mean, the quick guys are going to be the shortstops and the point guards and the quarterbacks probably, and a running back. I mean, they're just quick. Yep. And you may be, and that may be fast, or it may just be quick, or it may be both. But it also, kind of the other thing that we just underestimate is just the importance of having hand-eye coordination. The hand-eye coordination of a major league hitter is ridiculously good. I mean, they have no time to swing the bat, yet they do, and they barrel it up occasionally against a guy throwing 100, and I have no idea how they do that. but they don't have any idea how a pitcher can throw the ball within a 3 or 4 inch little area regularly. Although some guys have trouble doing that, there are people that can do that, and it's with movement. And so, you know, that's a pretty big skill too, to do from 60 feet away.
Rick, when you were at your best on your best day, could you put it in like the upper left, lower right quadrant, could you get even finer than that?
Oh, finer than that. Yeah, finer. I mean, I wouldn't be aiming at a quadrant. I'd be aiming at the glove, and I always wanted the catcher to have the glove in that spot. And, you know, now people are concerned about catchers giving away location, so they're a little more hesitant to do that. But I wanted a target, and my mind is, I'm going to hit that glove, and if your glove is off the plate and it's called ball one, I'm going to talk to you about that. Because, it's you, me, and the glove. That's it. And so I would say, that regularly you could do that. Tom Seaver used to say he would make 4 or 5 mistakes every start, and he would hope he would get away with most of them and give up a couple runs and get on with a win. And now I was never that good, but you're talking about 4 mistakes out of 100 pitches.
Right.
And when he means mistakes, he means an inch or two off of where he planned it.
And on the hitting side, like last night, I forget who it was. Maybe it was or yesterday afternoon. Maybe it was Newt when he hit the home run. But I was at the game. Then I was listening back on MLB.com, and one of the broadcasters was saying, "Oh, it's a hanging curve," and he made him pay the price. And I've taken a lot of at bats. I've never once thought, "Oh, it's a hanging curve."
Yeah, like maybe they never threw you any, Dave. Maybe they just went right after you.
They only got the bad ones.
Well, you know the Brant Brown mantra that he's been talking to all the players about. He's got several kind of sayings that he used, pithy sayings, and one of them is, "Home runs are not hit; they're thrown."
Yep.
And his point is, you're going to hit home runs on mistakes like hanging curveballs, like Lars did. Now, you got to be ready to do it. You still get the credit for it. But, you know, don't try to hit a home run on a pitch that the pitcher is making it difficult to do. Otherwise, you're out.
Very cool. Rick, have a great time in New York. We'll see you soon.
All right, guys. Good to chat.
testing season is right around the corner, and this is when confidence really matters. When kids take time to review key concepts and strengthen their skills before assessments, it can make all the difference. IXL helps reinforce what they're learning right now, so they walk into every test feeling prepared, capable, and confident. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts, designed for students from pre-K through 12th grade, IXL delivers personalized, interactive practice that adapts to your child's level and pace. It's an easy, effective way to support learning as the school year heads into its final stretch. Studies show kids who use IXL score higher on tests, proven in all 50 states. IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now, and listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLLearning.com/audio. Visit IXLLearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events, major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
249 DGS. So I know you'll get this. It's just kind of a weird question. I was thinking about generations, and I'm bitter because I'm 3 months out of being Gen X. I'm the last 3 months of the boomers, and I feel no connection with the boomers and a lot with Gen X, but it is what it is. What would you say the major contributions of the different generations have been? Like, I feel like with Gen X, and this isn't getting into the fun Gen X stuff, like we drink out of the hose, but it's like tech.
Yeah.
Like during my time, the internet, and maybe it was, you know, technically boomers who invented it, but you know what I'm trying to say. Like, what do you feel like Gen X, let's start with them, contributed to society?
I think the just making tech life, right? The expansion of it. Because everything is built, every invention, every technology is built upon what came before it. So there's always that kind of climbing the ladder, so to speak. But it's turning things like from, you know, the possibility to the reality, right? Your reality is your phone is a computer and a phone and a television and a video game system, right? Like all of that stuff is essentially at the hands of programmers and inventors and business people that were Gen X. I mean, I think that's we are the ones that our generation, we didn't do it, I didn't do it, but like my generation of the group of people that turned those things that were the beginnings into everyday life.
How about you guys? What do you think the millennials have contributed so far?
Big picture, it's hard to say because the millennials are still a pretty young generation,
right,
and haven't really like taken over any sort of industry.
Not responsible yet.
Maybe like we do a lot of startups and stuff. So
yeah, I mean, there are startups. I would attribute, because I think, I don't think Zuckerberg's much older than we are. So I would maybe, you know,
Facebook.
Yeah, like social media type stuff. I think
social media is probably the big one, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it was with our generation that it really started to take off, you know, in the early stages. You know, we kind of built up Facebook and Instagram and, you know, Twitter.
Yeah.
So I would say, yeah, especially from a tech standpoint, that's for any other kind of standpoint, I think, like Rachel said, I think it's the paint's a little too wet to really determine what a lasting legacy would be. But
how about boomers?
Well, I mean, so they essentially were like, and I know the timing of it is a little different for all of them, but they were essentially builders for a lot of the life, right? Like making cars, building houses, like the post-World War II boom was the greatest generation, but also leading into the baby boomers and kind of continuing that. They
gave us social justice.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great point because you know, it's funny because you know some of the people that we would call boomers now were called hippies back in the day, right?
Some of them.
So it's a, that's what I'm saying. It's an interesting generation because it did a lot. They did a lot of things, and they had all, they also were in a great spot in terms of opportunity. Although, you know, when you think about it, you know, there were, I don't think any boomers would have been involved in Korea because they would have been too young. But, you know, they were the ones that fought in Vietnam. You know, there, I mean, like that generation was. And so you had the counterculture, you had both things going on. So, yeah, I'd say there was a big change because they were also, I mean, that's the generation that blew up music with rock and roll and the way that changed society and all that. So, yeah, it was a generation of change. And it's also maybe the first gen, not maybe, I think it is the first generation as a whole that has lived healthier longer, right? Because a lot of advancements had happened during that time. So there, we say this all the time about people in D.C., right? I mean, you didn't used to have 85-year-old senators because you didn't make it to 85. But now we do, and I think that may be part of why you don't see many Gen Xers or many millennials in positions of power where if you went back to the 1940s, I would be willing to bet you that a lot of the people in power were in their 40s and their 50s. But it's not as much the case now because we live longer and you live healthier lives, so the people that are in those spots don't move out.
Which I hear a lot of complaints about from younger people.
Yeah, I mean,
that the boomers just won't retire.
Well, again,
I think anyone has
most do.
Any sort of a...
most retire, though, right? Just not the ones in the big jobs. I mean, like senators, like CEOs, like that. I think
my
parents
who control
are boomers.
Everything.
Right. I think the vast majority of boomers do retire and do normal things. That's why I don't like putting those criticisms on the generation because most of them are just like anybody else. They just want to retire and be with their grandkids and do fun things and live their lives. But the people that are in those positions of power do not let go anymore.
Yeah. Were you about to ask if you have an obligation to step aside?
Yeah.
I think. I don't know if bad an obligation, but I think it's a bad look to hog up all the attention and all the opportunities. I think it's not great.
Like a great example is when Biden said, he didn't say, I'm going to be a one-term president, but he kind of said that and pivot to the next generation. And then when it came time, he didn't want to.
It is a great example.
You know?
No, that's actually a perfect example. Yeah.